This is deprogramming from the Universal Media Network.
For many people, particularly in this country, thinking about religion is kind of counterintuitive. It's almost something you're not supposed to do.
What was your first idea of God, Henry?
Let us have faith.
Because there is no God!
What was your first idea of God, Marsha?
Let us have faith.
Because there is no God.
Who told you about God, Henry?
Let us have faith.
Because there is no God.
Well, my first idea of God, Mrs. Parker, I still have it. I guess he'll be with me as long as I am.
Let us have faith.
Because there is no God.
What was your first idea of God?
Well, I couldn't exactly say.
You're listening to It's All in Your Head FM, monotheism but in stereo.
Matters of religion and belief and meaning, the deepest things that come from the deepest part of our beings. We reach to symbol, we reach to poetry, we reach to art to try to begin to articulate what those things are. And I think that we have to acknowledge that we're in this realm when we begin to talk about those. And if we take the symbols and don't acknowledge that they're symbols, then we get into this trouble.
If we try to make them facts, you mean?
Now, does God mean something very real to you, Henry?
Yes.
That 90 to 95% of Americans who believe in God, you can break that down. Not everybody believes in the Judeo-Christian God. There's actually a sizable minority who believe in sort of a higher spirit of some generic kind, not necessarily a personal being. Stephen Hawking says, we'll know the mind of God. He doesn't mean the Judeo-Christian personal God who we can pray to. He means this, the cosmos as a whole. And to me, what really turned me around when I was a born-again Christian that really challenged me was the idea that there are so many different kinds of gods.
But Jesus himself said, I am the way and the truth and the life, and nobody gets to the Father but by me.
Different kinds of gods. And
he's either the way or he's not.
And if we, do a show of hands of your listeners, how many believe in Zeus or these different kinds of Greek gods? Well, they'll all be atheists. So the difference between me as a non-believer and them as a non-believer is that we've all dismissed all these other gods except this one monotheistic God. Clearly, this is a historical, culturally determined concept, God and religion is.
Whatever religion, Christian, Protestant, Hebrew, Catholic, there's only one God.
Freud called religion an illusion.
You feel it in your head. You feel it in your head.
That our science is not an illusion. And Freud was saying, come down from your heights, human beings. You are not as great as you say that you are. You are full of sexuality. You are full of hatred and lust and envy. Face yourself. I am going to save you from those delusions.
Is God a person to you, Henry? Is God a person to you, Henry?
No, he's something more like a thing.
I think this is a really complicated moment.
The thesis of how we believe is that humans are pattern-seeking, storytelling animals. It is almost impossible for us to look out at nature and not find some sort of pattern and then tell a story about it. That's what myths and stories are all about, is giving some meaning to the pattern. And, you know, only in America would a conversation like this consistently be brought back to this need to prove God. Look, you can't prove it. Let me just say it as clearly as I can. There are no proofs of God.
May I?
Whether there is a God or not, nobody knows. We'll find out, I guess, in the end. But in the meantime, as storytelling animals, we continue to spin stories about our world, and the scientific worldview is our story for today.
That just happened. That just happened. You hear so much, that thing just happened.
Kant, Immanuel Kant, Bertrand Russell said, we don't know the intrinsic nature of the physical world. What's it like in itself? What's the thing in itself? Kant said, one natural speculation is that intrinsic nature of the physical world has something very deep to do with consciousness. This leads to what philosophers call panpsychism.
I don't think panpsychism has... my own view is... consciousness is good and something special about human beings, and it's not everywhere. I mean, that's the cool thing about it. It's not everywhere. Consciousness just hides in very special brains.
Well, Berkeley would say, have you ever seen anything without consciousness?
Well, that's true. But
no, every time you see something, you're conscious.
Well, that's right. But consciousness goes where I go, where minds go. But minds aren't everywhere. Electrons don't have any minds.
Do we really have any record of any observation of anything that didn't involve consciousness? No, because the observation was conscious.
You're getting spooky on me. I think we've got to end this conversation, because before I get really weirded out...
This is the Universal Media Network.
It's All in Your Head, FM.
You're listening to It's All in Your Head, FM, putting the less back in Godless.
Let us have faith.
My God is so big, so strong and so mighty. There's nothing my God cannot do.
Let us have faith.
He made the trees, he made the seas, he made the elephants too.
Let us have faith.
My God is so big, so strong and so mighty. There's nothing my God cannot do.
Let us have faith.
But in point of fact, since the Neanderthals until now, we have a choice of many, many cultures' notions of what the afterlife is. And the amazing thing is that they don't cohere very well. Each culture designs what it thinks is important for its afterlife. And they don't necessarily have any relationship to other people's afterlives.
Is your heaven in the sky?
The funny thing is that Americans' near-death experiences confirm our notion, our relatively optimistic notion, that we're all going to heaven.
How
about your heaven, Eddie?
But if you look at near-death experiences over 2,000 years of history, you find that most often in the past, they were fearful experiences in which people experienced going to hell. And when they recovered from it, then they changed their lives and became good religious people.
My first idea of God was...
It seems to most Americans that we don't need to do that. Most of us think we're living just fine lives, and so we experience heaven.
My first idea of God was...
The band in heaven...
That it was somebody...
favorite song
up in heaven.
When we have these experiences,
they play it once again. They play it all night long.
I think it's a normal part of the human mind that we do have these extraordinary experiences.
No.
There's a book called Why God Won't Go Away. And it suggests that we are, in a sense, wired to have these extraordinary experiences.
A place where nothing ever happens.
In which our religious life is innovated, and we find new ways of expressing what the afterlife is about. So I think of these notions of the afterlife, which are produced by societies, and only recently by individuals, after all, as kinds of mirrors in which a society takes stock of itself. They tell us one thing or another, and they all have to be believed with a grain of salt. But the strange thing about fiction is that you can believe it entirely. In fact, you have to believe Hamlet entirely in order to understand what the play is about. So my feeling is that history always tells lies, but since this is fiction, we can safely believe it.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly...
There's a lot in the culture that encourages us, I think, to confuse passion and apparent sincerity of belief with truth.
But since this is fiction, we can safely believe it.
I bumped into a girl roller skating, and the girl that was roller skating said something about God. My classmate said he isn't real. It was a great discussion, but we all went off with good feelings.
I believe it all depends on what you believe. Whoa, whoa, now I believe it all depends on what you believe.
Those who actually believe, accept, walk with him in faith, they are the ones that will be in heaven.
The people that will be in heaven are those who have invited Christ in.
I'm going to be there, are you?
When do you think of God, Douglas?
I think of God when I'm laying in bed, Miss Parker. It makes me feel better. I seem to go to sleep faster.
Said the number one reason they believe in God is the good design and complexity of the universe. But when you ask them, why do you think other people believe in God? Here it gets interesting. The good design of the universe argument drops way down to sixth place. Shooting up to number one is emotional need and comfort, whereas when you ask people why they believe, emotional need and comfort is way down on the list. So what we have here is an intellectual versus emotional difference in why people believe. Most of us think that we come to our beliefs, all of our beliefs, not just religious beliefs, political beliefs and so forth, for rational reasons. That is, we feel we have to give logical arguments and rational reasons for why we believe. But we know that other people have not arrived at their beliefs for those reasons. We, and in actual fact, we all arrive at our beliefs for other reasons, usually other than intellectual reasons. So we attribute then to other people motives different from our own.
Everyone has heard of a heart attack, but what about a brain attack?
We've got to think about epistemology, the way we know things, how we know things.
Well, you don't have an answer. Well, that's because God made it that way.
No!
Well, that's because God made it that way. That's just a dreadful way to conduct religion, and it's also doomed, because it means that the more things science is able to explain, the smaller and smaller part of the unpainted part of the floor is left for you, this poor God that you've created to occupy. That doesn't, it just seems silly. It's the path that one is drawn into when you start trying to use nature to prove God's existence.
It was dogmatism that split us in the first place in the 16th century. It's dogmatism, this whole notion that there is a truth that is the truth, that is the eternal truth and the unquestionable truth. We learn at the end of a telescope that it got us nowhere.
Does anybody feel close to God when they're happy? Does anybody feel close to God when they're happy?
The human brain.
I think statistic that people have come up with and from various points of view is that we're one quarter conscious and three quarters unconscious at all times.
God makes your mind work.
One quarter conscious and three quarters unconscious at all times. And that both are functioning together in tandem with self-knowledge, without self-knowledge.
Isn't unconscious just another part of the brain that's operating? It's not some mystical
force.
We're not
just brains. No, it's not a mystical force, but it's unconscious. We can't know it in the same way.
You feel it in your head. You feel it in your head.
Researchers who study intelligence and different human capacities, the big hot new area is to look at the impact of the emotional on the intellectual and to see how much those two processes go together.
The notion here is that we, not God, are in effect creating our own response unwittingly, thus tricking ourselves into believing it is coming from elsewhere.
No matter what the religion, no matter what the form of worship, prayer makes certain regions of the brain light up
like this
in a special and unique way.
Like this.
The frontal lobe, right behind the forehead,
like this.
Focuses concentration.
Like this.
The limbic system, deep in the center,
triggers
feelings of awe and joy. The parietal lobe at the back of the brain brings on that feeling of becoming part of something greater than oneself.
So the limbic system can be a place where fear is stored, but it can also be, as we're learning now, a place where that faith is stored as well. I think they're trying to find, is there a scientific basis for faith?
Why even bother studying it?
It's controversial,
why
it's difficult.
Why even bother studying it?
And out of all the different kind of faiths, is this something that binds us together? Do our brains, no matter our faith, all seem to light up the same way? And does something change in the brain when someone is faithful?
Well, you're a neurosurgeon. What do you make of these brain scans showing the brain responding to prayer in a particular, very unique way?
I think there's something there.
The researchers asked members of three Christian groups to say the same prayers for about two-thirds of the patients. The findings show that prayer had no effect, but engineered bladders have worked well. The leakage problem improved, and most importantly, telling patients that someone is praying for them might increase their leakage problem.
One explanation for why people have these experiences of a sense of a presence in the room, a presence of God or aliens or ghosts or lost loved ones that have died and come back to visit us, is that the left temporal lobe coordinates all the brain modules together into a sense of self. You feel, we all feel like a single person. I don't have multiple people in me, I'm just one. And by messing that up, by bombarding the right temporal lobe, what Persinger does is he creates a sense of two selves in the brain. Now, the brain is not capable of sensing two selves. So it senses one self and another self in the room, another presence in the room. Now, what that will be interpreted as depends on your culture. People 400 or 500 years ago experienced incubi, succubi, because they lived in a demon-haunted world. People 100 years ago experienced spirits and ghosts because they lived in a spirit-haunted world. The kind of world we live in is an alien-haunted world. We live in a world filled with X-Files and Star Trek and Star Wars and all these search for extraterrestrial intelligence. We're obsessed with alien, the idea of alien intelligences. So, of course, we would interpret these anomalous experiences, these senses of presence, not as demons, but as aliens or gods, because we've always believed in gods.
Take pictures of people's brains while they are sleeping.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could...
If we go back to the beginning, we shall find that ignorance and fear created the gods, and that custom, respect, and tyranny support them in order to make the blindness of men serve their own interests. If the ignorance of nature gave birth to gods, the knowledge of nature is calculated to destroy them.
Let us have faith.
We all are in this cultural trance.
Christianity is stupid. Christianity is stupid. Christianity is stupid. Christianity
is
stupid. Christianity is stupid.
How about group marriage? Or marriage between daddies and little girls? How about marriage between a man and his donkey?
So do you believe in God?
No, of course not. Why would you take a religious book and say, oh yeah, these have got to be true, this makes sense, when the people who wrote that book thousands of years ago, they were just superstitious and they didn't know how the world really worked.
FM.
You know I'm afraid to say there's no God, even though I know there's no God.
What? That I don't understand.
Listen with me to the mighty wind that blows.
Let us have faith.
Look with me.
Connectedness to the world and to others and have these transcendent emotions. But does that say anything about the existence of the supernatural, or is that just a phenomenon that we as human beings experience?
But isn't there a huge arrogance in all this that, you know, God is beyond definition, beyond pigeonholing and describing fully?
Any
definitions are provisional. And to say someone else's understanding of God is simply wrong could be a spiritual arrogance.
Well, only from those who are relativists. I'm not a relativist. I'm an absolutist. And I believe that Jesus Christ said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Now, if I am a follower of Jesus Christ, who am I to say that I'm not going to put myself under the authority of the teaching of Jesus Christ? It's not arrogance. It's submission to the lordship of Jesus Christ. You know, I know that in a modern relativist, syncretistic age, the exclusive claims of the traditional Christian faith jar the ear. Jar the ear. Followers of Jesus Christ.
There is no devil, there is no heaven, there is no hell, and there is no God. Oh, there he goes again!
Well, the problem with fundamentalists is if they're not having a good time, they think that everybody else shouldn't be having a good time.
What's very curious about this period of time is you've got this mixture of things. You have, on the one hand, this hunger for meaning and embracing meaning, yet you have a whole movement in our culture that's rejecting even the possibility of meaning. This is called postmodernism, the idea that not only do we have our individual stories, but there's nothing but stories. The problem with this view, which is very popular in certain circles, is that it is profoundly relativistic and ultimately nihilistic. It leaves you all alone with just a story. And there's something that's deep inside of all of us that tells us there's more than just a story going on here. And I want to know what it is. is. And I think part of the move to fundamentalism, to some degree, in that it's a genuine move back to the fundamentals, is trying to get in touch with something you could really depend on, something you can actually know, not just a guess, not just a shot in the dark, not just a fantasy, not just a religious a placebo or something like that, but actually the real McCoy. And I see both of these things kind of happening at the same time.
Well, I have to disagree with that.
Obviously,
I don't think there's any God, and if you want to have meaning in your life, it's up to you to give meaning to your life, and it's not just an empty experience. We're all part of humanity together here.
So God doesn't seem like anything to you?
No, he doesn't.
We all are in this cultural trance.
What does God seem like to you?
Well, I don't know.
We all are in this cultural trance.
Is God a person to you, Harold?
No, God is not a person to me.
I'm a fan of Freud and a fan of his arguments, but just because you wish that something is so doesn't mean that it isn't so. What Freud's saying is that he'd say, well, maybe instead of saying that a God's there, it makes more sense to say that these are universal human wishes.
What's the best thing you can say about faith?
Not a lot. I think faith is pernicious because it teaches people, especially teaches children, that believing something without evidence is a virtue. I think it's a bit pernicious because I think that children should be taught to seek evidence. They should be taught to be skeptical. If they're told something, they should immediately say, what's the evidence for that?
Good morning, children. How are you today?
Whereas faith teaches you not to ask for the evidence. It teaches you this is true because it's true because it's true. You just have faith and you don't have to justify it.
Don't think. Accept what is. Accept what authority says is true.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum.
I think it may be, the power of it may come from getting children early. If you're taught from the cradle upwards.
Don't think.
That certain things are true.
Accept what is.
You're taught that it's a virtue not to question.
Accept what authority says is true.
You're taught that if you start to have doubts, then you must pray to overcome your doubts. You're taught that if somebody comes along to you with plausible arguments to the contrary, then that's probably the devil speaking.
This is really fun because you can make a jello mold that looks like a brain.
There is a sort of wishful thinking element about that. I mean, quite obviously in the case of surviving after death, because it might be very nice to survive after death, but what's nice isn't necessarily true, and there are people who can't distinguish between what they would like to be true and what there is any evidence is true. And that, I think, might apply also to morality, where people feel, I think wrongly, that you cannot have a moral society without religion. I don't think that's true, but even if it were true, it wouldn't mean that the existential claims of religion were true just because they make people moral.
Ticking clock. Ticking clock. Ticking clock. Everyone stop.
This is the Universal Media Network. Plug up your ears and cover up your eyes because it's all in your head, FM.
Some people don't believe in God and some people do. And I don't know, it doesn't seem like there could be a God.
Homer Carr, there we are. This is It's All in Your Head, FM. And we now turn our heads and yours to Viewpoint, where members of our listening community air their faith-based opinions on a variety of topics. Tonight's viewpoint is from Dr. Harold Camping.
Yes, good evening. I'm Father Harold Camping, founder of Family Radio of California, with an opinion.
And now let's go back into history a little bit.
Billions of years ago, there was just a Big Bang in space. No one knows what causes Big Bang. It just happened. From this bang issued a huge rock, and on top of the rock was found a sweet, brown, bubbly substance. And over millions and millions of years, aluminum crept up the side and formed itself into a can, and then into a lid, and then into a pull tab on top of this can. And then millions of years later, red paint, blue paint, white paint fell from the sky and pulled itself into the words, 12 fluid ounces. Do not litter. And you say, Dr. Camping, what are you doing? You're insulting my intellect. And so I am. Because we know that if a can is made, there must be a maker. And if it's designed, there must be a designer. To believe the soda can happened by chance is to move into an intellectual free zone. It's to have an echo when you think. It's to have brain liposuction. Think about that the next time you're enjoying your soda. I'm Father Harold Camping, and I do thank you for this guest opportunity today.
The views expressed on Viewpoint in no way resemble any viewpoints held by the Universal Media NetWeb, Negative Land, or It's All in Your Head FM. And after a 2-cent deposit may be returned.
Scientists say the human brain continues to change through the process of evolution.
We Christians don't call it evolution because we believe it isn't something coming up out of blind nature, but something coming down from the world of light, power, and knowledge beyond all nature.
Scientists say the brain has evolved about as much as it ever will.
Now, are there things that are being discovered by scientists every day that they have not known before? Yes. Well, now, do you think that the scientists know all about this feeling of God?
Somebody looks at the complexity of human life and says, given enough time, anything can happen.
Time after time.
Another looks at that and says, given enough time, anything can happen. Another looks at that and says, a complex design like this, I wonder if there was a creator or a thought designer behind this.
Are you familiar with the little quip that million to one odds happen 8 times a day in New York City? It's the law of big numbers. There's enough stuff happening out there. There's enough particles. There's enough forces. The sun is burning. It's putting energy into the system.
That's
of course, we generate complexity
scientifically
out of
make sense.
Out of chaos. This is called emergence. The principle of emergence. Out of chaos emerges complexity. Without any designer at all you need is energy put into the system. That's it. It just happens spontaneously. Now, as pattern-seeking animals, it's impossible for us to think it can't just happen. There must be somebody behind the curtain pulling the strings. Somebody behind the curtain pulling the strings. But there isn't. But there isn't.
Have faith, hope, and charity. That's the way to live successfully.
How do I know? The Bible tells me so.
No!
Billions of years ago, there was just a big bang in space.
So, I'm only one of the many Darwinian biologists who believe we understand the meaning of life.
What?
The meaning of life.
What?
The meaning of life.
What is the meaning of life?
The meaning of life is, life is a series of machines which are programmed to propagate the instructions that built them, the hereditary instructions that built them. And so that's the biological meaning of life. I hasten to add, that's not, of course, the meaning of life for you and me. Love and family life and whatever it is we do, whether it's writing books or listening to music. But the reason you're in the world is the biological meaning. Given that you're in the world, then you can make life mean whatever you want it to mean.
In the timescale of the age of the universe, our human origins take up a tiny fraction. To illustrate this, let's compress the age of the universe from 15 billion years to the present into a single year. So the Big Bang happened at 1 second after midnight, January 1. Then our galaxy, the Milky Way, started around May 1st. Our solar system on September 9th, the Earth on September 14th, and life began about September 25th. Plants evolved about November 12th, the first vertebrates on December 19th, and the first dinosaurs on Christmas Eve. Mammals appear on December 26th, birds on the 27th, and the first humans at 10:30 p.m. December 31st. Our first civilizations began in the last 30 seconds. It gives us pause to reflect that paleontologists are trying to fill in the last 30 minutes, which represents 3 to 5 million years.
This is deprogramming from the Universal Media Network.
And now, once again, it's time for America's number one nature program, Wildlife Tonight, with your host, Dr. Oslo Norway.
Doc Oz here with a shocking remote from Wildlife Tonight. Right now, we're going live to Wildlife Tonight's Buck Logic over at the Dallas Zoo, where Buck is going to demonstrate why there never was any Adam and Eve. Buck, are you there? Buck?
Yes, Oslo, this is Buck Logic with Wildlife Tonight. And where could you find more Wildlife Tonight than the zoo? We're here in the zoo's new Stinky Monkey House, a generous endowment from the Simeon M. Stinky Estate, makers of Stinky Shoe Stretchers. And here with me is Chuck, the night shift monkey man. Is that right?
Yeah, for the purposes of this broadcast, that's fine, I guess.
Well, we appreciate you letting us in after hours to do this, Chuck. And now, if you're ready, please bring in the monkey.
Are you sure we should do this? I'm afraid I might lose my job.
Oh, it's quite all right, Chuck. I checked with City Council. They're all Darwinian.
All right.
And here comes Chuck with a chimpanzee. We'll do it right on the table there. Careful. Get him up against the armature.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Tie those straps securely. They can take your face right off.
I realize that. Oh, hold still.
So, what we're going to do right here on Wildlife Tonight is shave all the hair off this chimp from face to feet. And now Chuck is spraying the restrained chimp all over with Gillette's new Tough Guy shaving gel. And we're going to begin shaving this chimpanzee's entire body clean of all hair. I believe this is another exclusive for Wildlife Tonight, and it's all in your head, FM. Although, I must confess, I don't see why no one has done this before. Now, Chuck is...
Hold on a second.
Not too fast there.
I'm
Chuck,
trying, but...
Chuck is rapidly shaving the chimp's body now. There's a little discomfort, but come on, we've all shaved. Doesn't actually hurt that much.
Yeah, hold on.
Now we're seeing some real skin here.
Yeah.
Now, we're doing this full-body monkey makeover for the first time anywhere because, well, I'll bet none of you listening out there have ever seen a shaved monkey before in your life. Think about it. I'll bet never before. And you know what? There's an important reason why you've never seen a shaved monkey before. And it does not include protecting the dignity of the animal. That's just an excuse. Nope, you have never been allowed to see it because it is a shocking, almost unbearable testament to our own intimate link with animal evolution.
Hold on. Yeah, I know.
Oh, Chimp appears very angry.
Ouch!
He's strapped in a standing position to a sort of a crucifix-style armature on the table there.
Still. Ow, you little...
Trembling a little under the restraints. Be gentle, Chuck.
I'm trying. You know, I just... This cheap razor you gave me is not working very well on a chimp. I'm going to have to move to something else.
Chuck is now going electric for that thick back hair. Now, by the way, what's his name, Chuck?
Oh, this isn't a boy chimp. This is a girl. We call her Cherry.
Cherry. Wow. Yeah. Cute breasts.
Yeah.
Be sure to get all around her private parts, too. I want to completely shave Cherry.
I'm trying. I've never done this before.
Whoa, that makes her very angry.
Yeah.
She doesn't like that at all.
Yeah.
Well, we're sorry to have to put this innocent chimp through this, I guess, but it's simply necessary to create a greater good for all of us. Sort of like testing cosmetics on them. Now, Chuck's using a Jumbo Gillette Protec Tough Guy razor system on Cherry, and perhaps it should have been a Lady Protec, but seems to be working just great.
Good girl. Yeah, there you
from first shave to last, always a smooth shave with Gillette.
I'm sort of liking doing this.
And in Cherry's case, you know, I guess this is her first and last shave.
I'm glad you asked me to do this, Cherry.
Well, when this chimp is entirely shaved, everyone will see for the first time why we are truly all brothers to this sister under the skin. And now Chuck is finishing off her face and neck. Just leave a head of hair like us, that's all. No mustache, it's a girl. Great, that's it.
Good.
And here comes the hose. Rinsing her all off now. And there you have it. Look at that!
Wow.
Amazing! Creepy, but amazing.
Yep.
That's it. Get her out of the strap there, Chuck.
Yeah.
Turn her around. Just keep turning her, Chuck. Keep turning her. That's it. Amazing. Truly amazing. I think you'll agree.
She looks just like my kid.
I realize this at rehearsal. Once you see a monkey's full frontal bearskin anatomy, something we have never been allowed to see, it's so strangely like our own anatomy, just different proportions in the parts, but all the same skeletal and muscular structures. It's like an organic revelation. All right, Chuck, you can remove the shave chip. A wonderfully telling demonstration. Thank you. And don't worry about Cherry, folks. We have a little skirt and sweater for her. Well, what can anyone say? Truly a Wildlife Tonight revelation. And for God's sakes, if there was one, what more need we be? Well, that's it. Nature's clock is ticking. Thanks to Cherry the Chimp, Chuck the Monkey Man, and the Gillette Shaving Corporation, now in your face with the Protec Maximus 2-Jet Shave System, I'm Buck Logic. Now back to Dr. Oslo Norway's brain at It's All in Your Head FM.
That's it for Wildlife Tonight. Thank you, Buck and Chuck, and good luck.
Tune in to Wildlife Tonight next week when Buck Logic will be broadcasting live from the Austin Zoo as he lowers himself into the African lion cage to prove his theory that there is no God to protect him. Much more to contemplate from It's All in Your Head FM, so stay tuned right here from the sun.
We interrupt this program. The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is an attack warning. Repeat, this is an attack warning. Attack warning means that an actual attack against this country has been detected and that protective action should be taken. Important instructions will follow in 30 seconds. Oh, my God.
We interrupt this program. The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is an attack warning. Repeat, this is an attack warning. Attack warning means...
Attack warning means that an actual attack...
That an actual attack against this country has been detected. God, I got all this mucus. God damn it, I gotta blow my nose.